hey, listen, if you're a young guy, or anybody for that matter, and you want to change your life, well, you got to start deciding what you only have so much focus, you only have so much attention, you only have so much time, and you only have so much energy. So you better start getting really good at figuring out where to harness that time, that attention, and that energy like a laser beam, right? So that you can actually accomplish the things that you're trying to accomplish. If we want to change our life, if we want to change the world, it's going to require action, right? Most of us don't actually need more information. We just need to act on the information we have. The first thing we should do is we should step back and we should take inventory of where we're allocating our resources. Where are we allocating our money? Where are we allocating our time? Where are we allocating our focus, our attention, our energy? If you're trying to get somewhere that you currently aren't, take that time. And yes, it's a sacrifice. And yes, it's hard. But that's why most people don't have it. That's why most people are not on the right side of the bell curve. The ones who are taking that same amount of time and they're investing it, not consuming it. The thing that's going to really separate people in the next 10 or 20 years, is just my opinion, is people who become masters at knowing what's worth paying attention to. So we live in this age where there's more information than most of us could ever process. And I think many of us are feeling bombarded, trying to understand what's worth paying attention to, what's not worth paying attention to, what do I need to know? What do I need to learn in order to really get where I want to go in life? And I don't think that's going to go away anytime soon. I think with AI and just the influx of technology and our ability to get information even faster and in even higher volumes, I think that's only going to exacerbate the anxiety that this information age, at least in more recent years, has created. And so that's the conversation Jake and I are going to have today. Jake, myself, I think all of us are just trying to figure out what is worth learning, what is worth knowing, what is worth applying, what is worth taking action on to get to where we want to go in life, to really move the needle, to move right, so to speak. And so, Jake, thanks for being here again. And let's dive in.
Yeah, no, I appreciate being here for sure. I think, Zach, I was just thinking about it. I was thinking about when you were talking right there about how there is copious amounts of data or information out there. And really it's creating this sort of pressure, I guess, in my mind of like, now it's creating this urgency of attention, right? I want to make sure that what I'm spending my attention on is actually promoting what my final goal is, right? And for us, it's like to move to the right side of the bell curve. Like I want to be excellent at everything I do, and it's now all of the copious amounts of information that are out there are creating it, so you can go down a rabbit hole a lot easier because there's rabbit holes everywhere, you know. So that's where this question kind of sprouted from, is like, I could see, you know, a lot of people just promote efficiency, efficiency, efficiency all the time, you know, and I guess that's not necessarily in line, because I don't want to be the most efficient at my job. Maybe the most efficient time at my job is taking away time from something else, right? Taking away time from my wife or my faith or whatever. And it's, I don't think it's necessarily all about that. That's where this idea started coming out of, like, what is actually, should I be spending my attention on to create this life that I want?
Yeah. So in our last couple of conversations, we talked about, you know, how do you get to the point where you can live on one income? You can raise a family, your wife can stay home, all these different kinds of things in that vein. And I think what you're saying here, if I'm hearing you right, is okay, if I have these goals, if I know where I want to get to go or where I want to go, there's information overload about the possible ways to get there. And then how do I know which one of these batches of information or which one of these people that I'm paying attention to is actually going to give me what I need to get where I want to go? Is that basically what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, just to take a physical example of this, it's like, okay, if I want to make $150,000 a year, there's a few avenues that I can take, but what is like that? Like, let's say there's an avenue of sales, there's an avenue of starting a business, there's an avenue of, you know, of going to school, becoming a doctor, becoming a lawyer, all of these different avenues. It's like, that's basically it, is there's a signal to noise ratio, and I'm trying to figure out what's the signal and what's the noise.
Got it. Yeah. And I think one of the biggest challenges, and I said this to you offline, but I think the thing that's going to really separate people in the next 10 or 20 years, is just my opinion, is people who become masters at knowing what's worth paying attention to. I think that the challenge that we're really faced with right now is there is so much information out there that what I see constantly is people who have big goals, big ambitions, big dreams, and they spend 99% of their time in information gathering mode, in learning mode. And the people who I've been around who have had the most success, and we can define that in many ways, but just let's say success in the sense that they achieved the things that they were after. The one thing that I would say that most of them have in common is the ability to take action. You know, one of the things we joke about in my business is you can usually tell the people who are going to succeed based on how fast they can make a decision. Because the reality is like all this information and all this ability to go into ChatGPT or Gemini or Claude or whatever these tools are and just keep asking it questions ad nauseum. People think, oh, well, I'm gaining this expertise, I'm gaining this knowledge, I'm learning more, and that knowledge and that understanding is going to differentiate me. It's going to separate me from people who I might compete with. It's really going to set me a level above when I start talking to my potential customers, clients, whatever it might be. What they're failing to understand is what for many of them it's actually doing is it's giving them the high that comes, the dopamine that comes from thinking about what you want to do without ever having to actually go do it. And so people are just getting stuck in this information loop, and then they're never taking action, and then their life's never changing. And the most successful people that I've met that I know are the ones who get 70% of the information. And there's not like a set percentage, but for the sake of the example, they get 70% of the way there, and then they go, let's go. And what often will happen is some of them will succeed. Many of them will fail. And people are so afraid to fail. And so they look at that and they go, okay, I don't want to fail, so I'm going to keep gathering information. But what they failed to realize is the guy who started, who tried, who failed, got experience that the people who never got out of the starting block, they're never going to get that experience because they're just in learning mode. Whereas this guy, he's going to take that experience and he's going to reiterate, he's going to try again, knowing what not to do because of the failure. And so he's going to have a step ahead of where everyone else would be because he actually put it into action. And so I really believe that it's the people who can gather enough information to just maybe to validate their idea or to get them to the point where they feel a level of conviction about moving forward. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's like getting a parachute on, getting in the plane, flying up there and watching all your friends jump out and saying, I went skydiving. Because real skydiving forces you to stand up to the open door, terrified, and to jump. And I think what we're seeing is what I think will really differentiate people in the future is, listen, use the tools and learn, but you got to be willing to jump. You got to be willing to take action. Otherwise, your life's never going to change.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think one of the biggest things, which is, you know, video games. We talked about it a little bit as well, is, you know, one of the most popular video games in the world is this game called Call of Duty. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting because Call of Duty is a war game, you know? And so you go and you get this rush from after you get shot and killed in the game, right? You wake up and you're still alive. And you feel this, like this feeling of success from a false state. So I guess my question to you is when you talk about those things, is that what the person who's taking action, is that what they're identifying as noise? Like what is the signal that they're identifying to have enough courage to jump out of the plane? I think is what I'm asking.
Okay. So I think for me, the way I think about it, I talked about this in a video a while back, but you know, a lot of our culture has been indoctrinated in this whole concept of don't judge. And part of the reason that we find ourselves in the position that we do individually and collectively is because we've been told not to judge. And in reality, every day we have to make judgments, right? And one of those judgments, or many of those judgments, is what's worth paying attention to and what's not worth paying attention to. What's going to get me closer to where I want to go and what's not. And so I think what we're seeing today is there's a lot of people who don't know what to stop paying attention to while they pursue their goals, because they've never practiced or exercised the muscle of good judgment. And we call that discernment, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I think about like the video games as an example, you've got a bunch of young men who are addicted to video games. They'll play video games for hours every day. And then these guys, you know, a lot of them, they have ambition, they have drive, they have things they want to accomplish, but the video game gives them the feeling that they're chasing in the goals that they desire. And so they're like, well, I'm getting that feeling, so I don't really need to pursue my goals. Because pursuing the goals requires you to do a whole bunch of stuff for a very long time that doesn't give you that feeling you're after. And so they've artificially created this feeling through playing the video game. And then they fast forward 15, 20 years down the road in their life, and they never got to where they wanted to go. And they feel robbed, or they feel ashamed, or whatever it might be. And it's because they sacrificed, right, the long-term pain for the short-term gain. And I think, you know, we've talked about, I think my desire in having these conversations, my desire in doing what we're doing, is to really help awaken in men the idea of, hey, like, we were created in a way that can lead to us becoming a certain kind of something, a certain kind of man. And we're never going to get there addicted to the dopamine that comes from video games. And I'm not saying you can never play a video game, but I'm just saying that, like, we were created for more than getting, you know, quick hits of dopamine through porn and video games and all these other things, because that's what culture and that's what the enemy is using to lull us to sleep. And what I want to do is I want to help awaken men to what they're capable of. And the way that we're going to do that is we're going to remember, and we're going to go back to the reality that it requires sacrifice, right? Part of the reason that I think of investing the way that I think of life, I call it the investor's approach, is because most people go through life with a consumer's mentality. They just constantly consume. That's like the guy playing video games. That's like the drug addict. That's like the alcoholic. They're like, I just got to get my fix right now. I got to feel the way I want to feel right now. Whereas the investor says, hey, I'm going to sow a seed now. I'm going to make a sacrifice now. I'm going to go without something now. And I'm going to let it grow over time. And that's going to be painful at times. It's going to be boring at times. Whatever it might be, it's not going to be exciting, but I know down the road that what I'm going to get on the other side is the ability to consume more later, the ability to do more of the things that I want later, the ability to help more people later, the ability to provide better for my family later. And to me, I think that's really what we're talking about, is like, for young men, for middle-aged men, are we investing in our future, or are we stuck in the mode of consumption today?
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I think of, because guilty as charged, I was a former video game player. And, you know, what the one thing that I saw with a lot of it was there's this instantaneous reward, right? You get a title or a rank or something for doing something so well, right? And that is completely addicting. It is completely like, it's like doing everything that you would normally do in your normal life, right? You go to your job, and if you were to act like, I wouldn't say people who play video games are inherently, you know, not smart or not hardworking or whatever, because it's almost just like misdirected, I feel. Because if you, like, I did this once where I was like, I cross-analyzed the video games that I liked to play. And I was like, okay, what is going on with all these video games that is making me want to play them? And basically what I came down to is, like, I really like installing systems into things. I like making things a little bit more efficient. And that was this through line through all these videos. Then I took that skill and I tried to apply it to my normal job. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily inherently the problem of playing video games. It's exactly what you said, Zach, of like, It's got to be some level of delayed gratification in real life. It's like, you don't get the instantaneous hit of, like, all the time. Sometimes you maybe do of success in your normal life, where in a video game it feels like that. But it's the same part of your brain that you're building, I guess, in terms of attention as well. I mean, let's say, like, I've heard Elon Musk, going back to Elon Musk, he's talked about how he maybe once a week or something, I don't know the exact number, I remember him saying that he'd sit down and play video games for an hour just to, like, work his brain in a muscle that he's not doing it. So not necessarily that it's inherently bad. It's just what are you using that for? Is it to fill that dopamine hit, or is it to, you know, like you're saying, do something that's lasting?
Yeah, I think for me, I think of it like this. Most of video games, like when I was a kid, we loved to play Madden, and you like to play maybe Call of Duty or whatever. And a lot of the times what the video game represents is it represents the ability to accomplish a challenge. Because men were and that's why so many men play video games, because men were inherently created in such a way that we want to accomplish something, like we want to overcome a challenge. And that's what some of these video games represent. Many of them is this ability to build, to create, to have victory, to win. And so what I wrote down in my, as you were saying, that is like, I'm not saying video games are bad. What I'm saying is, oftentimes people will get stuck in video game world because there's nothing in their own life, in real life, where they have a challenge that they're accomplishing. They have something that they're chasing after to win, right? And so what they're doing is they're taking this thing that God put in them, that this desire to accomplish a goal, to overcome a challenge, to build something that doesn't exist. And they're like, I can't experience that in my own life as I've set it up. So I'm going to go experience it digitally. And then they get stuck in this digital world where they become a slave to the digital world. And so what I'm saying is, what it requires in order to make sure that we're not just living in this digital world of accomplishment and challenge and victory, and to do it in real life, is it requires understanding that what you can accomplish in a video game in a few hours, in life takes years, right? Mm-hmm. And so what it's doing is it's the video games are training this instant gratification. And that instant gratification, that consumption mentality, gets us stuck into a world where we basically become slaves at times to that worldview, like this consumption worldview, when really the people who really get to where they want in life, the people who make it the biggest difference in society, are the ones who go, okay, I'm going to take that same concept, that same principle of trying to overcome a challenge, try and create something that doesn't exist, trying to win a victory, and I'm going to apply it in real life, knowing that it's going to take maybe the rest of my life to do it, depending on what you're pursuing. And you, in order to do that, you have to be able to see the future. And I don't mean like see the future as in, you know, you can read the future or you have a crystal ball. What I mean is like you can close your eyes and you can envision a future that looks different than the present. And then you can actually make the sacrifices and make the progress to make it real. And so what I'm saying is, like, people who are doing that every day in their life, what many of them, I would say the vast majority of them, if you talk to them, what they'll tell you is, I just didn't have time to play video games anymore. It doesn't mean that video games aren't bad. It doesn't mean they don't still enjoy video games. It just means they're so busy building in their real life that they just don't have time to build in the digital world anymore. And they might go there for an escape every once in a while. But my whole thing is, like, what does this actually represent for young men? I think what it represents, if we go back to where we started, is we got to understand what's worth paying attention to. We got to understand, we got to be able to judge and discern what's worth our time, what's worth our energy, what's worth our effort. And so I think that the people who will have the most success in the next 20 years are the ones who can do things like turn off the distractions. And we've talked about video games, but for more people than video games, it's social media, right? Like, they'll go, or it's binging on Netflix. It's like, but they all have something in common. And in my opinion, what they have in common is that we're numbing ourselves, and or we're finding that feeling that we know we inherently desire through these shortcuts, and we're sacrificing our actual life and the thing that we're actually called and put here to build on the altar of these quick hits. This consumption versus this investment versus this creation. And what I want to help do, because I think if you look at society today, that isn't by and large working out very well. And so what I want to do, especially for men, is to say, hey, listen, you take all, like, if you are an awesome video gamer, like, take the same principles and start applying them to your real life. Because there's a big, bold, beautiful potential of a real life that exists. And the world needs us to lead, right? And that's not a very popular message today, but it's the facts. The facts are, the world needs men to lead. And so So what I want to do is I want to help awaken some of those guys who are maybe playing video games, or maybe they're doom scrolling on Twitter or X, or maybe they're sitting there and they're getting in arguments constantly on X. And I want to go, hey, listen, is that where you should be spending your time? Is that what you should be paying attention to? Because people who get sucked into those vortexes often never get out of those vortexes. And the world needs people to say, hey, I'm not going to pay attention to all this stuff anymore, because honestly, I can't control half of this stuff, and this stuff isn't really that fruitful. And I'm going to take the same effort, I'm going to take the same energy, and I'm going to start sowing seeds into the real world, into real life. And I think that's how we start to make a difference.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think if I'm seeing correctly, which you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's almost like an offense versus defense. I think for me, I look at where I've spent my attention in the past. Let's say in the time that I was playing a lot of video games, it was almost like, it was like, oh, well, I have time to fill. And it was like taking life on defense. And it was like, okay, I have time to fill. What do I do? And it was almost like, you know, it's amazing when you think back to like, man, how much time you were doing that task was based on one specific moment where it was like, oh, maybe a friend introduced you to a video game, or maybe like you made some quick subconscious decision to go on your phone and go, like you said, doom scroll social media, right? And it's like, that's just playing it on defense. It's just like being reactive to whatever you're instantaneously feeling. And that's taking up so much of your time where it's like, you're losing track of where it even started in the first place versus what I think you're saying is being on offense, is being proactive with your time, proactive with what you mentioned before, your long-term vision. Like is like, it may take you your entire life to do what you're doing in this video game in an hour, but it's like, what is that long-term vision? What does that offense look like?
Yeah. And I think it's also that for some people it's information consumption, for others it's doom scrolling on social media, for others it's getting lost in the world of video games. And what do they all have in common? They all have in common that those are safe places where you don't have to take action, right? If we really want to make, yeah, exactly. They're sandboxes. It's like, hey, you can try all the things over here in the fake world. You can learn everything, but never have to take action and take a risk, right? You can play these video games and get the high and get the feeling and feel like a victor without ever having to go out and take that same risk in real life. And so, And often as guys get older, at the expense of your family, right? Instead of going out there and putting that time and that effort into making a better living so your wife can stop working or whatever it might be in your particular situation, like you're addicted to video games. And right. What I'm saying is if we want to change our life, if we want to change the world, it's going to require action, right? Most of us don't actually need more information. We just need to act on the information we have. And why don't we do that? Well, because usually we're afraid to fail. And so it's safer, right? Because most of us crave certainty. So it's just safer to sit there and keep learning. It's just safer to sit there and keep fighting on the internet with people who are never going to change their minds. It's just safer to play video games for 4 hours on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday with our friends, right? It's safer. It keeps us in our comfortable, as you call it, sandbox. And what I'm saying is, hey, listen, if you're a young guy or anybody for that matter, and you want to change your life, well, you got to start deciding what you only have so much focus. You only have so much attention. You only have so much time, and you only have so much energy. So you better start getting really good at figuring out where to harness that time, that attention, and that energy like a laser beam, right? So that you can actually accomplish the things that you're trying to accomplish. Because all this other stuff, like the enemy is really good at distracting us. The enemy is really good at saying, hey, you have some downtime, you know, just go relax. You know, go blow off some steam. And yeah, there's a time and a place for that. I'm not trying to say there isn't. But if every night or every other night, you're just spending gobs and gobs of hours blowing off steam or trying to relax or doing whatever, it's like, well, that's probably not the best use of your time if you're not where you want to be yet, right? If you're trying to get somewhere that you currently aren't, take that time. And yes, it's a sacrifice. And yes, it's hard. But that's why most people don't have it. That's why most people are not on the right side of the bell curve. The ones who are taking that same amount of time and they're investing it, not consuming it. They're investing it into something that's going to change their life, not tomorrow, but next year. the year after that, the decade after that. And that's the part that I think in our society, in our culture that's obsessed with consumption, the ultimate price that we're paying is that we have people who are living lives that are just a result of being indoctrinated in this idea that we're just here to consume instead of to create, instead of to invest, instead of to multiply.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, going back to our original part of it is of attention. You know, you said having that laser focus attention. And I think if I can make a distinguishment here, it would be is your attention an investment? Is the attention that you're allocating right now, is it going to support you in the long-term goal? One thing that we talk about all the time is if we look back on something that we did or a conversation we had, or, you know, we've worked together a lot, we go, okay, we spent 200 hours on this. Okay. And we look back and we go, okay, what that 200 hours, what if we spent that doing something else? Like this 200, like where would we be at in our station? And that might help a person listening to this make that transition in their mind of like, okay, is what I'm doing actually an investment? Is what I'm spending my attention on actually an investment? Let's say somebody looking through social media and they go, okay, I spent an hour a day for the last week. That's 7 hours, right? 7 hours over the last week. If I spent that 7 hours doing something else, would it have done something more of an investment, would have compounded its hours, the time spent, right? And I think like, and the other thing that I'd add is I don't think either of us are saying necessarily that like, oh, don't be on social media, don't be on video games, don't do any of that. I think is it in line with what you're actually investing your time, what you want for your goals? Because I think the people that we're talking to are the ones that want a better life than what they have now. They want to be on the excellent at everything they do, where they want to be on the right side of the bell curve.
100%. So the what you were just explaining is simply the allocation of resources. And we've talked about this a few times, but the reason that I always come back to investing is because the reason that investing and learning the concepts and the core principles of, you know, what they call value investing, the reason that I would say that changed my life more than anything is because what it comes down to at the end of the day is how do you allocate, in this case, in investing, capital? And what that means is how do you know where you should put your capital, your money, where do you allocate it, and in how much proportion do you allocate it? And so what we're not saying, what I'm not saying, is that you never play a video game or that you never go on social media. But what I'm saying is if you're not cognizant of how you're allocating your time, your attention, your energy, and your money, then it's like the saying, if you don't have a budget, you'll spend the money to fill your budget, right? Like you'll just spend all your money. Yeah. Because what the budget's doing is it's creating some guardrails where you're forcing yourself to think about where you're allocating your resources. Mm. But we don't take the same approach to our social media or to our video games or to our this. And so what I'm saying is if we're not at a place in our life where we want to be, the first thing we should do is we should step back and we should take inventory of where we're allocating our resources. Where are we allocating our money? Where are we allocating our time? Where are we allocating our focus, our attention, our energy? And then go, hey, if I'm not happy with where I am, if I desire something more, if I think I have something inside of myself that's greater, then the only way I'm going to change it is I'm going to have to start changing where I allocate all these resources. So in the investment world, it's like, I'm not saying never own a bond, but what I am saying is that if you want to outperform the S&P 500, there's a very low likelihood you'll ever do that by allocating most of your resources into bonds, right? You're going to need to allocate some of those resources into things like private equity, into the stock market. And so my point is I think that what we need to start teaching people and encouraging people is that all of your life will come down to where did you allocate the resources that God gave you? So for the guy playing 4 hours of video games every night or every other night, it's like, well, how much time you've allocated all those resources into video games? How much of your resources did you allocate into like reading your Bible and praying, spending time with the Lord? And if it's for most people, probably a lot less than what you allocated to video games, and you're not where you want to be in life, well, it might be worth taking inventory of that and saying, you know, I'm going to sacrifice this consumption of the video games, and I'm going to start pouring some of that allocation into actually putting my faith first. or my family second, or my career, or whatever it might be. And so to me, it's just like, I want to help people. And that's why I said people who can understand what to shut off, the noise to cut out, all that is at the end of the day is understanding how to allocate resources. And people who learn how to allocate their resources the most effectively, the most efficiently, the most productively are the ones who get where they want to go and who help other people get where they want to go. They're going to be the ones that impact society. Ultimately, that's what Elon Musk does. Elon Musk is just a master resource allocator. And you can like him or you can not like him or whatever, but you can't argue with the fact that the reason he can run, you know, multiple ginormous companies is because he is a master at allocating resources. And so I think for us, a lot of what this conversation comes down to is even what I said a few minutes ago, people who are stuck in the learning phase, they're allocating all their resources to learning. Mm-hmm. And learning, that's why, like, we talked a couple episodes ago about teachers. It's not that teachers aren't valuable. It's not that teachers don't create value in the market. It's just that teachers will never create as much value in the marketplace as the doers, because it's in the doing. It's in the allocating of the resources into the doing that society changes. It changes some in the learning. But if the learning is then not applied into doing, it's not as valuable as the doing after you've done the learning.
Right. No, I mean, I think of AI too. I think of how AI is such a, you know, you talk with ChatGPT or Gemini or whatever, and it's so funny because so much of the responses that they send back are so, like, they just bolster your ego. They go, oh yeah, that's such a great idea. Yeah. You know, all this stuff. And, you know, one thing that we've talked about in the past is just how AI is going to make so many things easier for people to start. And I think what everybody also has to have in the back of their mind, which is that same, along the same conversation that you're having, is what resources are you being given by God that you're allocating? Is what are you hearing from God that you're being told to do? Right? Because that's going to be the future, is going to be AI is going to be able to systematically think really well, but it's the direction that you're going in that's hard. And you talked about it before, having that laser focus on your intention, the direction that you're being told to go has to come from, quoting somebody else, the manufacturer, right? It's got to come from the source. That where is this direction that we're flowing to? Where is the direction of my intention? Is it in line with what we're actually supposed to be doing?
Yeah, it makes me think of, like, in the Bible, you hear these stories about when the false god people brought their gods and their prophets, and they did these miracles, and then the Israelites brought their prophet, and then he did a bigger miracle, and people read that and they're like, yeah, I don't believe any of that. And it's interesting because we're going into a time where, while I'm not saying it's the same thing, it's like we're going into a time where AI is going to be able to answer everybody's deepest, most difficult questions. And that's going to be like the equivalent of that, what I just described in the modern day. It's going to be the equivalent of, like, the Old Testament false god prophet coming and giving people the miracles and the answers and the future readings and all that. And then you're going to have Christian people who, if they have not allocated time to hear God's voice and to become close with God, they're going to hear that stuff and they're going to go, oh, that makes sense. I'm going to do that. I'm going to follow that. It's like the equivalent of following the false gods and the idols. And I think what we're called to do is say, hey, like, are we allocating enough time? Do we have enough white space in our life? Have we shut out enough of that noise to where we can hear God? Because God's going to reveal things that the AI can't reveal. God's going to give me direction that I can't get from the AI. And I think so much of what we're really talking about here and offline where we started before we jumped on this conversation is, how do I know what to pay attention to? How do I know in the sea of noise, like, where the constellations are? And I think we're going into a world where more and more it's not going to be spending more time asking Chat or Gemini or Claude. It's going to be, can you hear God's voice? And I think it's those people who have actually carved out time in their day, who've created some quiet space in their life, when the world is clinging to all this noise and all this distraction and people are going to be losing their minds because it's already happening. These people over here who have carved out that space, they can hear God's voice, they can feel his nudging. They're going to be the ones that can say, hey, this is not the right way. Follow me. This is where we're going. And I think that's a big part of it. It's just like, I think we're coming into a time where for the first time, maybe not the first time, but in the greatest way, in the greatest, I don't even know what to call it, but it's like the juxtaposition between the AI wisdom, the worldly wisdom, and what God would say is going to be, it's going to be more important and clearer and more contrasting than ever before.
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right there, and I think that you know, AI is going to be a super powerful tool for those that can use it, but it shouldn't be replacing what you know is inherent to our nature, right? It's our blueprint, and like you said, it's going to be the person that can hear the spirit and hear understand where the direction is going. That's going to be directing the train, right? It's going to be the most successful people that I can think of are people that thought ahead of everybody else, right? They saw what everybody else wasn't seeing, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what AI is not, it's pattern recognition, it's machine learning, it's tied to a satellite in the sky, you know, and that's not what we're doing, right? That's not what we're intended to do, is to listen to something that we created. And I think, you know, the biggest thing, going back to our sandbox idea, is this is anybody who spent any amount of time on ChatGPT or anything understands that it's the best sandbox. You can say absolutely anything and you're not going to get your feelings hurt at all. And the reality is what I think we're talking about is that's just not the case. Sometimes it takes sacrifice, like you're talking about. Sometimes it takes, you know, zeroing your attention on something so much to where it's like, it may take multiple years or decades to complete. And, you know, the fact of the matter is nobody else is going to be able to understand that unless you're speaking to the spirit, you know?
Yeah. And as you were just saying that, I wrote down, it's like sitting in the ChatGPT world, which again, I'm not saying it's inherently bad. I think that we've used it for many good things and we'll continue to do so. But the way that it operates, it's almost like getting a fifth place trophy, right? No matter what you ask it, no matter what you say, it's telling you how great it is and how great you are. And I think here's the reality is that doesn't actually help people. So if you can't get comfortable asking ChatGPT to treat you like Gordon Ramsay would, or like Kevin O'Leary would on Shark Tank, you're probably not going to grow from it, because what you're doing is you're going to go to ChatGPT and you're going to ask it to basically stroke your ego. And it might stroke your ego right into bankruptcy, depending on what you're trying to use it for. And so for me, again, this is why I go back to, if we're using ChatGPT and we're using AI to do things that supplement our humanity or enhance our ability to serve people and make an impact, et cetera, you know, that's a good way to use it. But if we're using it to search our soul and trying to teach us things that we would really want to learn traditionally through our Bible and our time in prayer, I think that's a recipe for disaster, because what I know about it is it's going to tell me what I want to hear. And the reality is a great coach, a great mentor, God himself, he's not in the business. They're not in the business of helping us by just telling us everything we want to hear. They're in the business of helping us, usually by telling us the things that we don't want to hear, but that we need to hear. And unless you set up, you know, your AI right, that's not going to happen. And so for me, I think going back to where we started, which is, I really believe that our focus is going to be one of the top things that shapes our future, right? The things that we focus on, the places that we put our attention, those are the things that are going to shape your future. And so if we want futures that are bright, if we want futures that are prosperous, if we want futures that are abundant, if we want futures that have peace and hope and joy and love and all those different things, the way that we get that is not paying attention to everything that the world is paying attention to. The way that we get that is actually the opposite. The way that we get that is often turning off the very things that most people spend all their time paying attention to. And I think we're going into a time in this world where that's going to become clearer than it's ever been. People who have the ability to focus on a thing, commit to that thing, go for that thing, and have longevity in that thing are going to make the biggest difference, because everybody else is just going to keep switching from one thing to the next thing to the next thing to the next thing. And then they're going to wonder why none of the things are working. And it's because doing it that way doesn't work. You know, you've heard the studies. we don't really multitask. People think they do, but all they do is rapidly switch in between tasks. And all the research says the people who make the most progress, who get the best results, they don't multitask. They focus on one task, they get it done, they don't let themselves get distracted, and they move to the next task. And so I think what we're really trying to encourage people is, hey, let's take inventory of our lives and let's see how often are we switching from thing to thing to thing to thing, or information to information to information. And if you or I, if we feel this feeling of anxiety, much of it is because that's what we're doing. And I think what we should be doing is figuring out, what's the thing I can focus on? What's the thing I can commit to? What's the thing I can persevere through? That while everyone's gone through 10 things, I've been focused on one thing. I think those people are the ones who are gonna get the best results.
Yeah. I mean, one thing you said there is you said that the future is coming. The future is coming where people who have mastered where they're allocating their attention is going to rise to the top. I'd almost argue that it's already here. Like, I'd almost argue that there's people out there already doing that. And, you know, I think the easiest way for, let's say, somebody listening to analyze whether they're one of those people or not is to just like, to just look at your life and think like, you know, is what I'm doing actually investing in my overall goal over time? I think it's just like, when we look at some of the most successful people in the world, like you've said, they're just so little noise to signal ratio. They're so dialed in with their attention, and you know they're clearly the most successful people in different areas, right? I think there's a lot of people, you know, like Myron Golden. If anybody's familiar with Myron Golden, he's kind of that same thing where he's really dialed in on his attention and his noise is so low. He's so direct, you know, and a lot of people watch the news, somebody like Nick Shirley that I watch a lot, and he's in the news a lot. He's this young kid who is just looks like he just has the most courage out there. So when you say the future is there or is coming, I think it's here, and I think people are already doing it, and it's proof that it's possible to like zero in your interest and become like an absolute monster at whatever you're doing. Monster is probably not the right term, but you know, this is somebody who just is like excellent. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think it's always been there. I think it's how the world's always worked. I think what I'm saying is it's just going to become more obvious.
Yeah.
It's going to become more and more obvious that people who know how to focus like a laser beam are going to just wipe the floor with people who are constantly flip-flopping from new thing to new thing, because every time you flip from thing to thing, it's just like in real estate. If you just keep trading property after property, right, and you're not 1031 exchanging, let's say you're just like buying a property, you're flipping. Let's say you're a flipper. You're probably right. Going to build a lot less wealth because of the transactional cost every time you do it, and the taxes and all those things, versus the people who buy a couple things and they just hold them for a really long time because they're not paying capital gains taxes every time. They're not paying broker's fees every year. And so my point is like, that's the equivalent of what we're talking about. People who are constantly flipping from thing to thing or just learning all the time are going to lose to the people, like worse than ever before, I think, to the people who are like, no, I'm going to pick a lane, I'm going to go for it, and I'm just going to let it compound and compound and compound. And I wrote down as you were talking, this is how I think about it. People who are totally focused on everything going on around them. So they're scrolling, they're playing the video games, they're just inundated with other people's opinions and what other people are saying and what other people are producing and creating. They are very reactionary. They're constantly in their mind reacting to what this person said, or they're trying to think about what this person said. And so it's just a reactional life. People, on the other hand, who can drown that out because they are focusing on something that they feel convicted and passionate about, or they're just very good at, they aren't reactionary, they're creationary, right? So they don't spend their whole life reacting to what everyone else is doing. They spend most of their life creating something that they're doing. And I think that's what we're really talking about here is like, Jake, how do you at 24 years old know what is worth consuming, which is reactionary? You have to do something based on what somebody else created, versus what does it look like to take what I've consumed and reacted to, process it, sift it, sort it, organize it, and then go create something out of it? Because if you spend your whole life, or if we spend our whole lives constantly consuming, we're just spending our whole lives reacting to the value everyone else is creating in society. And the people who want to move right on this bell curve, they have to learn how to take that, drown out the stuff that's not worth reacting to, hearing, observing, absorbing. They have to focus on the ones that they really know are going to move the needle, but then they have to transition that into going out and creating something as a result.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's so good. I mean, you hit the nail on the head there. I think, you know, we talk a lot about creating value. We've talked about it in our past couple episodes. And you know, I think what we're talking about now is, like you said, the direction of where that value is going and how to actually take something and do it, you know? And I'm excited to try it myself. So
sweet. Well, we could probably cut it there. If you're still here watching, listening, we appreciate you being here. Hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you did, hit that like button if you're on YouTube, and we'd love to have you subscribe to the channel. That's important to us. It's important to what we're trying to do here is not so much the subscriptions, but sharing it with a friend. If you liked it, you thought somebody would benefit from it, would you share it with them? Yeah, that's how we get the word out. We want to continue to try and have conversations that can help people, especially men, especially I would say men about my age and Jake's age, really continue to move right and to hopefully have an influence on culture and on our families and on our companies and our society, because I think we really need it. And so if you think somebody in that vein would benefit from this conversation, we'd love it if you'd share it with them, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks.